want to welcome all of you to our second ECC webinar. And we'll thank all of our presenters again. Kate's already introduced them. Just want to make sure everybody knows Chris Tabb. I'm going to really push you, Chris. I hope you know that he is the newest member, O&M consultant, in the outreach program at TSBVI. We are very fortunate to have him. You need to get to know him as soon as you can if you don't already. We're also very fortunate that we will continue to have Ruth Ann for about another month. Two more months? Oh, good. So we'll have her for 2 more months. Oh, good. We can give her all kinds of stuff to do. She has nothing on her plate at all. Right. Sorry. Also, Cyril is here, our outreach director, Kate. Olga was not able to join us, but we do appreciate her support and all of our webinars. Today, our focus is going to be on O&M. We did talk quite a bit about O&M and the new legislation during our last webinar. That was the one on September 11th, and many of you participated in that. We're going to be discussing it even more today. But before we get started, just a few things I want to mention. Kate's already mentioned the upcoming webinars dealing with the ECC that Outreach is going to do this year. The dates on two of them changed, which she mentioned. Just want to let you know that when the original information was posted, the Independent Living Skills was going to be in April. That is now February 5th. And Rec Leisure will be April 2nd. The next webinar will be on social skills and self-determination. That will be Thursday, November 6th from 3 to 4. And we hope that you will all join us. The other point that I want to mention is that all of these webinars, the main ones on that are on the screen right now, and that is on slide number slide five, will only be for 1 hour. And we realize that's a really short amount of time. We know we can't possibly address all the issues and questions related to all the different areas of the expanded core during that amount of time. We hope, however, that a shorter time will allow more of you to take time out of your busy schedules to join us and participate. And we hope that this will provide a format to bring all of us together around specific areas of the ECC so that we have an opportunity to share information and suggestions. All of this, of course, to help us in meeting the needs in the best way possible for our students with visual impairments. So because each of these webinars is only an hour, we encourage you to contact us with your questions and any issues ahead of time before the actual webinar if you can. And some of you have actually done that for today's webinar. Christy and Ruth Ann and Chris will be addressing some of the questions that arose in the last webinar and questions they have received from some of you since that time. We know, however, that's not always possible, and questions always arise during the course of the webinar. So we encourage you to communicate with us during the webinar this afternoon through the online chat, and you should see that already on your screen. Cyril has graciously offered to monitor the chat. There were so many questions last time, she will have her work cut out for her because we anticipate that there will be a lot of questions again. We'll do our best to address those during the course of the day. Hopefully, your questions will be answered. But we do anticipate lots of feedback from you. So what we're going to do is collect all of those questions and comments from the chat today, and then we're going to post them along with our answers on the TSBVI blog. So Cyril will be moderating the chat, and Chris, who is new to Outreach, and we can always give him so many wonderful things to do, will be the one who is monitoring that blog. And of course, it was Chris's idea anyway, so hey. He's good. But I really think it's a wonderful idea, a great way for all of you to communicate with each other about O&M issues. You can find the O&M blog by clicking on blogs at the top of our main page. Scroll down the menu on the left-hand side under categories to orientation and mobility in Texas. The link is www.tsbvi.edu/blog. Is there anything you want to add on the blog, Chris?
That sounds terrific.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So returning to the topic of O&M today, other O&M trainings are in the next slide, and I think we're ready to move on to slide number 7. Those of you who were able to participate in the webinar back on September 11th are probably familiar, hopefully, with the Q&A document. During that webinar, we looked at that document, and it's the one that was developed to address some of the questions related to the new legislation in Texas dealing with the ECC and O&M. I know Kate attached that document to the invitation, and it's also available on our website.
And in the pod.
And in the pod. And it's on the link on this PowerPoint. All right. Christy and Olga discussed that in detail last time. Christy's going to do that a whole lot more this time. Before we start, just want to make sure everyone has all the handouts for today. So what you should have, if you've had a chance to download them, print them, you should have a copy of that Q&A document. Hopefully it will help you if you got that. A copy of the PowerPoint, and it's actually a Word document. I don't know if they can actually see
it. It's their handout. Just
a handout that is a Word document of the PowerPoint. You have a selection of handouts of the Region 10 ECC checklist that Christy will be going over. And then you have a resource document on the expanded core curriculum. Those should be the main handouts that we will be talking about today. And Christy, anything to add? Ready to go?
I am ready to go. So I get the lovely part of reviewing the law again. And it's always one of my favorite things because it's simple. You ask a question, the law gives you the answer. So as Anne was saying, we have presented these several times now. And so I'm going to be going through them very quickly. This is the part where if you have questions, send them in on the chat, and Chris will be tabulating those. And we'll get to as many as we can now and as many as we can later. So I'm going to be starting in the Q&A document on question 18. This is the group of questions that are specific to O&M. I will refer back to some of the other questions that sound very similar in the document, but I'll be starting there on that page 8. So that first question is, what is the role of the O&M in evaluation and instruction in all the other areas of the ECC? Well, you want the easy answer first, is the role is it's critical, of course. In evaluation, I think that most O&Ms don't realize that they are addressing all those 9 areas, or for the most part, most of them, in the natural context of an O&M evaluation. So if you remember in one of the earlier questions, the question was, is if the child is not being identified as a child with a visual impairment, do you have to evaluate in all the 9 areas of the ECC as part of that evaluation? Well, the answer to that question early in the document was no. However, when you're doing an O&M evaluation, most of those areas are covered. And we're going to see that when we show you guys some examples of how we do ECC checklists later. So the answer is, during evaluation, the O&M's role is critical in looking at most of those areas of the ECC. And in instruction, it is the same answer as you can expect. It is critical and sometimes even more important for the O&M to look at those things like social skills, daily living skills, all those kinds of areas. So working together, collaboration is the number one key answer there. Okay, question number 19, moving on. Does an O&M evaluation include areas of the ECC? Oh, I think we just answered that question, didn't we? So, yes, a lot of these questions are quite redundant, but the answer is exactly the same. If you think practically, an O&M evaluation, for the most part, is going to cover those 9 areas. So much so, you guys, to the point where I think we can even restructure our O&M evaluations to be able to give some of that information in a structured format of the ECC areas. Now, does that make sense? So if you're looking at use of optical devices, which is a standard part of the O&M evaluation, why not just change that into use of optical devices / assistive technology? And so we can relate and correlate our O&M evaluations to the 9 areas of the ECC very, very simply by not doing any extra work. Isn't that classic? All right, question number 20. What happens if TBI and the O&M disagree whether a child is eligible as a student with a visual impairment? We got to remember, what does the law say now? Let's go back to the law first. Eligibility is based on 4 things now. Initial eligibility, SVE, LMA, iReport, and OM evaluation, all right? If everybody can't play well together, what are we going to do? The law says it's not one person's decision. For eligibility, it is an ARD decision. So if we can't agree on eligibility, then it is an ARD decision there. That is the basic law. However, best practices, same thing we've been preaching the last few times that we've done these webinars. Communication, collaboration. I will give you just a recent example. I had an O&M, one of my O&Ms call me just very recently saying, okay, guess what? I just did an evaluation on an infant, and I think the kid might need services. So I talked to the VI teacher, and guess what the VI teacher had done? She completed her FEE LMA 2 weeks ago, and it turns out that she did not qualify the child. So now we have this issue of lack of communication. It was very simple. When the two spoke again later on, they realized what the lack of communication caused the issues, and they came to a conclusion on reevaluating in 6 months and talking to each other and making sure that that happened the second time around. So don't forget that eligibility is based on all four of those components now, and you must speak together. All right, question number 21. This is easy. Who can provide O&M in the school system? Got to be ACVREP certified. Got to pass that test, got to be approved by the board, got to have all those things done. End of question 21. Question number 22. We don't have any questions coming up so far, so that's good. Question 22. What happens if, after an O&M evaluation, the O&M and the TBI disagree about the need for O&M services? All right, so this kind of looks like that other question we just had a minute ago about eligibility, right? But this might be a little bit more of a twist here. Remember again, what is the bottom line? Whose decision is it about the need for services? The ARD's decision. In this case, if the VI does not qualify and the O&M does qualify, then basically you're just going to open a big old can of worms that we don't want to open. So if that happens, though, in question 12, something that's caused a little ruckus in our field, but I think that if we have that upfront communication, we're not going to have cases of this happening where the child doesn't qualify through the FEE LMA, but they do qualify through the O&M. And if that happens, then question 12 addresses that and what the results are going to be according to TEA are that the instructional service arrangement is going to be instructional for O&M and not a related service. Now, I know that all of you have a lot of questions about that, and we honestly don't know exactly, you know, where that's going to lead, and does that mean that the VI still has to be at the ARDS? Well, I would think so, because the O&M evaluation says that the child is visually impaired and does need specially designed instruction, but it could potentially mean that the service that the O&M has provided will be an instructional service, an instructional arrangement, and not a related service. But what's my advice? Don't go there. Qualify for VI in general, and VIs really look at the ECC areas, because I can almost 99.9% guarantee you that you're going to find some areas of transition and areas of need there if the O&M is seeing some things such as distance vision at all. Okay, question 23. If a student has received an O&M evaluation, all right, already had one years ago, and did not qualify for O&M, does that student have to be reevaluated again at each reevaluation? Okay, does everybody get that? Kid has had an O&M evaluation before? Because this question is going to look a lot like question number 25 in just a minute, but this one, the student did have an eval, did not qualify. Do they have to have an evaluation at the reeval time? No, they do not. However, the second part of that law says that the O&M must be a part of that multidisciplinary team that reviews the data and determines whether there's a need for evaluation. Now, some folks, you guys, are doing that across the board. It's a three-year reevaluation. We just reevaluate for O&M. Some folks are making that choice, and that's in your Q&A. Some folks are asking that the O&M comes to every ARD that has to do with reevaluation discussions and are being a part of that team, looking at the data to determine the need. Some folks are doing a read form, and I'm going to show you, I think that we might be able to show you an example, or at least we're going to show you a link that will take you to a sample read form. But some folks are saying, okay, well, three-year reevaluation is coming up. We don't know if the kid's going to need an O&M reevaluation or not. Let's ask the O&M to fill out this read form, collect the data ahead of time, and present it to the ARD committee, whether it be in person or send it electronically or give it to the vision teacher, however your district, you know, determines that. And that's the way that the O&M will be a part of that team that looks at data, okay? So the only thing that I will caution you is that a lot of, here recently, a lot of my vision folks are showing up at three-year reevaluation ARDs and realizing they're talking about reevaluation and forgetting that is the three-year reevaluation time frame. So we've kind of started up a new calendar that says, okay, which kids are up for three-year reevaluations? And kind of done a spreadsheet of that so that we know when we're going into the ARDs that they are three-year reevals. And there's that form right there. Thank you, Kate, for putting that one up. It's just a data collection sheet. And we get permission to collect that information ahead of time and present it to the ARD. There's topics about talking to other related service folks, talking to parents, reviewing the data, reviewing FIE and FBE LMA, and of course anyone that was you can share and use this form however you like. Just put your information at the top of it. All right, so just a couple options there for does the O&M have to reevaluate at the 3 year? And some people are even opting to say, yep, they just across the board are going to reevaluate. All right, so the next slide has just the link for that form that you see on the screen right now. So I'm going to pass it and go on into question 24. This is one of my favorite ones. It's not just VIs and O&Ms that don't play well together all the time. It's also legislatures and rulemakers and rule writers. So question 24 is, why does the rule still say that the VI should make a recommendation on the need for an O&M evaluation? Well, we got the federal law. Then we got the state law. And then we got commissioner's rules. And they all kind of follow each other. And commissioner's rules is just kind of an interpretation of what the Texas Education Code law is. And so there's just not, the commissioner's rule is just not being rewritten to explain what the Texas law now says. So some people still keep that little blurb in their functional vision, learning media assessment, that says, you know, the part about the need for an O&M evaluation. And we have a little sample in the Q&A and what you can write in that spot right there. Oh, I forgot to forward my phone. Sorry, folks. Okay, so and that little blurb is must be a part of our team in evaluating data. Therefore, a recommendation on whether an O&M evaluation is needed needs to take the O&M's input into consideration. So just a nice little blurb if you need to put that in there. Some people were still concerned about that being in commissioner's rule. All right, so now we're going on to question 25. And 25 is going to relate back to 23. Remember that 23 was what if the student had an evaluation already? But this question relates to what if the student has never had an O&M eval, then when would that evaluation be requested? At their annual ARD, at a three-year, at a re-eval? When in the world do we do that? Well, we got a lot of phone calls at the beginning of the school year saying, oh my gosh, this kid's been VI for 7 years. They've never had an O&M, and an ARD's coming up. Do we need to have the O&M come do an evaluation really quickly? No, 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 no. You do not automatically evaluate. What does the rule say? The law says initial, and any time there's a talk of a reevaluation. And then, of course, the third component for best practices and common sense, you guys, is anytime the need comes up. If you're an annual ARD, it is not the three-year eval. The parents say they just took the child to the Retina Foundation and they've lost another 40 degrees of field, then that probably tells me that we need to ask for an O&M evaluation right away. So don't just do it initial and at 3 year. Do it whenever also common sense dictates. All right, question number 26. Is an O&M required to attend every ARD? Even if a student is not receiving or has never received an O&M evaluation. Nope, the law says nothing about art attendance for an O&M. Just the same rule is still in there, the same law about a teacher with a visually impaired attending, but not the O&M attending. But we do want to caution you about one thing. If you look in Texas Education Code 89.1050, there is a lot of information about the mandatory people at an ARD, and one of those components reads this. It must include an individual who can interpret the instructional implications of evaluation results. So, if an O&M has done an evaluation recently on that child, but can't make it to the ARD because of whatever the reason is, and no one else is there to review the evaluation and discuss the instructional implications, then there might be an issue with that Texas Education Code being not addressed correctly. So I want you guys to really be careful about that. You know, an O&M can always participate by phone to explain their evaluation and to review those instructional implications. Okay? I know in the past we've been letting other people review those. That's something that even we'll be working on at Region 10 a little bit stronger. All right, question 27. I'm going to look at this one very quickly. Section 504, yes, if the kid doesn't qualify for special ed, but they need O&M, and the team decides they're 504, you can do it. You just have to use local funds, and you always have a 504 person you can go to. I can't ever answer all those 504 questions myself. It can be done, but it has to be used by local funds, and that process is a little bit different as far as eligibility for special education. All right, last question, 28. If a child does not qualify for special ed under IDEA or the student with a visual impairment, would the service be travel training? It's my favorite thing. What do I always say to you guys? Don't go there. O&M is not travel training. Travel training is not O&M. We aren't qualified. They aren't qualified. So that question has a lot more information in the handout and the Q&A about law and what it says about travel training and O&M. But no, I'm hoping that nobody is providing any travel training unless they've been certified in that area, trained in that area, and have permission to do that. I think we're finished with the Q&A. If any questions come up over that? All right, then we are going to move on, and we're going to talk the second part. You know, the first part is just quickly looking at the law. The second part is we're going to be looking at how do you document evaluation and instruction and progress in the ECC. And this is going to be kind of fun. We're going to show you a real sample, and then we're going to move on into showing you how we can address those through instructional strategies. And then Chris is going to finish up the presentation with showing some really neat resources, Chris and Ann. So I want to review a couple things with you. Remember that the law does not specify how we are to document strengths and needs in the ECC. Every district, every vision teacher should work with their district and their administrators to figure that out. Again, the way that we do it at Region 10 is that we use a series of three checklists. It's the initial gathering of information before we dig deeper into true evaluation, and we use those based on the evals kits from TSBVI. Those checklists are divided into three areas, and that's kind of important to understand. A very traditional nine areas of the ECC checklist is the first one we use for ages 0 all the way up to grade 7. And we use a couple other tools for infants and babies and toddlers also. And then whenever the child gets up in transition age, somewhere around 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade, depending on the level of the student, and then up, we use a transition checklist from the evals. And then for students who are multiply impaired, visually impaired, all the way from infancy all the way up to 21, 22, we use the infused skills. And, of course, so many of you guys use other things out there. That is great. I am super pleased that you're using different types of tools and different ways to document. That is all just fine. But if you need a way to start, then we are always going to encourage you to use a system that's already in place that might be a little bit easier to use. So I think Roseanne's going to tell you a little bit about how Playing Well Together works the best.
It's really, really important that information is gathered from a variety of people that have contact with the child on a regular basis. Of course, parents and guardians would be one of your first go-to people. because they can provide important information about what the child does at home. As an outreach consultant, we frequently find that the child behaves differently at home than at school. And to have that information can help you know how to work with that child and bring some of those skills into the classroom. Obviously, you want information from the comms and the TBIs. The OTs and PTs are also very important. Speech language pathologist, that has a lot to do with areas of the ECC for self-determination, social interaction skills. So you want to include them. Of course, the classroom teachers and the paraprofessionals that see the child every day and see how they perform in a variety of different environments. The DARS or NDBS counselors, the ones that the children that do have an active caseload, getting information from them is a really good idea. And I'm sure there are others. Anybody else have any idea about some other people that you might go to get information? I know that there are other people. Sometimes even the secretary in the office will know how the kid reacts in that environment, whether the child becomes very, very quiet and is very shy, or whether the child becomes very gregarious and likes to engage with people that they don't know particularly well or see regularly. Collaboration for all of this is going to be very, very important. As an O&M specialist, we are teaching or including pretty much all the areas of the ECC in our lessons on a regular basis. It just kind of comes to us naturally. But we haven't had the need, really, to do much documentation about it. The new laws change that. We do need to document. And doing it in conjunction with the TBI in particular and drawing in information from all the other specialists is really going to be important. Cyril, you were going to say something? No? Okay, okay. One of the things that I use or used to use as I was teaching with kids, as I really like the acronym ACROSS SI, I used to say ACROSS VI, but then visual efficiency was changed to sensory efficiency. I believe that this was created by Nancy Tell as part of the QPVI. And it just helps me kind of remember all the 9 areas of the expanded core curriculum. Because if you took this slide away and you asked me to name all 9 areas, I probably couldn't do it until I started thinking about this acronym. A stands for assistive technology. C, compensatory skills and career education. R, recreation and leisure O&M, and we've got 3 S's, social skills, self-determination, and sensory efficiency, and then, of course, independent living skills. So I just lots of times think of, if I'm out on a lesson and something happens, I'll think, oh, wow, this really fits into one of those S ones. Now, what are those 3 S ones? And I'll think about these 3, and then try to put it in my notes if I manage to do that. So I have come up with a couple of different students and a lesson that would be very similar to lessons that you have done over and over again through the years. And I'm going to be using this acronym to cover all of the 9 areas, addressing the 9 areas. Christy, you were going to talk about...
Thanks, Ruth Ann. So there's a link to the 3 ECC checklists that we use, and I'm going to have going to give you guys a little bit of description of these 2 kids that Ruth Ann and I are going to review. I'm going to show you a sample of their checklist, and then Ruth Ann is going to show you how she addressed those areas of need through instruction. So the first student is a 6-year-old with cerebral palsy. I'm going to be using the Infused Skills checklist, which is the one for kids with multiple and visual impairments. And then the second student is a 16-year-old with albinism. And we'll be using you know, it, you have to remember that for this child, for a 16-year-old, we could potentially use the ECC ages 0 to grades 8, although he is in 10th grade, or we could use the transition checklist for him for grades 8 and up. And in this case, because he's kind of new to me, I'm going to use the ECC ages 0 to grades 8 and get a really good, definite idea of where he is in all specific 9 areas of the ECC, because the transition checklist is much more global. So I'm going to take him back, since he's new to me, and use that form. So let's get started. Let's look at student number 6 and their infused skills checklist. I think Kate's going to put that one up on the screen so you guys can follow along with me. I'll tell you a little bit about these tools. We use them annually with our students. We usually do them ongoing during consultation kinds of direct service time, however it works out. We do definitely do it as a team approach, the BI, the O&M, parents, related service, classroom teachers, and such. And we do it, like I said, pretty much ongoing, year after year. So some of the data collection you see on that form there indicates multiple years of data that we've collected. Now, a plus means that they have this skill down. They can generalize it. A minus means it's an emerging skill. And a blank means the student simply is not able to perform it yet. And you'll look, as we go through here, I've highlighted some areas. There are pluses, there are minuses, and there are blanks with this student. The infused skills checklists are for 3 levels of students. Level 1 being the lowest and most severely involved level. Number 2 being a student who has much better communication and probably mobility skills. And number 3 being a student who is what we usually consider functional skills. I say is a good walker and a talker, second grade academic level even, but a good communicator and a good person, a kiddo with good mobility, but not necessarily strong academic skills. So if you look at this form, we have pluses in all the level ones for the most part, except for that very first one, which is landmarks, and that is a blank. So landmarks, the definition of landmarks is: uses tactile, visual, or auditory landmarks at juncture points in a familiar route to move in the appropriate direction. So, I know it says just landmarks on that S6 indicator, but that's what that means. And that is a skill that we have identified there being a need in. So, as we go on through that checklist, the next part that's highlighted is C5, which is label and comment. And, of course, we don't know what label and comment means. But if we were to go back into our infused skills books and read exactly what that means, label and comment means labels or comments on objects, actions, people, or places based on perceptual characteristics of objects. All right? So remember what that is, because you're going to see that Ruthann's going to have an instructional strategy for labeling and commenting on objects for that student. All right? Next one. The next one that shows a need is starts interaction C8, and that correlates to independent living skills. And starts interactions, the definition of that in infused skills is uses some behavior to effectively start an interactive routine or to engage a partner without specific prompts in a familiar routine. Now, you know, Deborah Sewell and I have talked a few times, you guys, about correlating the infused skills to exactly the ECC areas, and in a perfect world, that would happen. But when we started discussing that, because, you know, I have to label these myself, assistive technology, this is independent living skills, this is social skills. And when you use the infused skills, it's going to cover several areas of the ECC, several ones of the components that you can show weaknesses for some students are typically covered by, you know, some of them can be O&M and assistive technology, or can be social interaction and assistive technology. So you can kind of pick and choose how these correlate to the areas of the infused skills correlate to the expanded curriculum areas. I hope that makes sense to you. Because a lot of people look at the infused skills and they think, oh, this doesn't make any sense at all to me. But if you really read into it, you will see we're simply talking about the expanded core curriculum. It's just labeled a different way. Okay, let's look at E9, contact and praise. Well, you see, that's about personal relationships. And what contact and praise means, it means, seeks rewarding social contact or praise in a structured situation, such as giving a handshake or a high five or saying a verbal hello. So we have checked that as being a need for that student. And as we go on, the next few, performs own part, that is a career education goal. The meaning of performs own part is performs own part in a familiar routine without constant adult prompting. Is that not a great skill for our kids to have at this area? That is a career ed goal. Seeks out activity, rec, and leisure all the way. Seeks out some activity to do during unstructured, non-adult oriented time. Perfect choice for a leisure rec time. E15 says indicates choices. That shows an area of need there. That is all about self-determination, indicating choices. The definition of that is indicates clear choices about a variety of objects or activities by using object symbols, by signing, by speaking, those kinds of things. And S7, I want you to notice there for a second on S7. If you look over to the far left, it says organization. Remember, infused skills is only broken into two major groups. Social competence, it's all about communication, and organization. And O&Ms, if you start looking at what these components are under organization, they are all based on independent travel and movement and knowing where you are in space. So it's really cool when O&M starts filling out these forms also. They realize how much it is O&M related. Matt, organization for devices is a compensatory skills activity, and it efficiently uses low vision devices and or assistive hearing devices to gain information about the environment. You're going to see that in one of Ruthann's activities. And the last one is matching, and that's sensory efficiency, using tactile and or visual and or auditory skills in order to sort and match. So now I'm going to let Ruthann take over and start showing you how we've taken this checklist of strengths and needs, identified the major needs, and then moved them into instructional strategies.
Okay, so this student is a six-year-old child with cerebral palsy, and the child uses a power wheelchair and is learning a route on a new campus. So I've used the acronym across SI. So we're going to start with the A part, assistive technology. We're doing tactile markers. We're looking for tactile markers to identify specific rooms on a route in the school building. And under the infused skill checklist, that would be C5, which is label and comment. And that's in the social competence area. For compensatory skills, we would have the student use a voice output device to match tactile markers and hear the name of each key room. And under infused skills, that would be number S7, devices. So you could also have that be under assistive technology as well as under compensatory skills. And a lot of these can address several different areas of the ECC, not just one area of the ECC. Career education, delivering an envelope with the daily attendance to a basket in the office, that would be E12, perform your own part of a skill. Then recreation and leisure, stopping in the cafeteria to play a simple familiar tune on the piano, this would be seeking out an activity, which is E14 in infused skills. The O&M one, identifying landmarks as part of a sequential steps of a route, is S6, and that's just an O&M goal, which fits in real well with mobility. Social interaction skills, greeting the secretary in the office and shaking hands, that would be contact and praise, which is E9. In the infused skills, self-determination, choosing the final destination before going back to a classroom, that's indicating choices, which I always try to have some kind of choice in a lesson. Sensory efficiency, matching the tactile symbol on the envelope with the symbol on the correct in-basket in the attendance office. That's B11, which would be under matching. and independent living skills, asking the cafeteria staff for the day's menu using the voice output device. That would be C8, independent living skills. When I was making these up, I was thinking, these are things that we do all the time. And any one of you could easily have written this up and included all the areas of the ECC. It's really, for us, it's a no-brainer. We've been doing it forever. Okay.
And Ruth Ann?
Yes, go ahead.
You know, we have another student, but in the sake of time, because I think that Chris's resource list is awesome, and I want to be able to share that too. I think if anyone really doesn't understand how the system works of how you do a checklist and then, you know, instructional strategies follow it, and how these evals, the use of the TSB evals works really, really well, then you can go through this on your own, this next student. Student two, you have the handout that Kate sent you that shows the areas of need, and you have the slides now that Ruth Ann created for the instructional strategy. And you can go back and forth with student number two, who's the 16-year-old, to see exactly where those needs checklists flow so easily and gracefully into the instructional strategies. Do you think that might be a good idea to move on into Chris's resources?
Yes. I don't think you're going to have any troubles being able to match up. Not everybody's going to have exactly the same answer, but you're going to be able to figure it out.
And Christy, for everyone who's out there, the EGEN 10 checklist, you've done trainings on that, and there was the trainer of trainers. So if they have more questions about how to use that and apply it to the instructional piece, someone in each region has been trained to help do that, although they may want more support from you or from someone else at Region 10. But just want to let them know they can also contact their service center for some support.
Absolutely.
Originally, we had this session for about 10 minutes, but I want to make sure we have enough time for Ann to do her resources and Kate to do the wrap-up so you all can get your code. Just hang in there. You're about 10 minutes away here. So we'll move into some apps for orientation mobility, and we're going to go through each of the nine areas of the expanded core curriculum, and I will make a couple of blog posts that include a lot more details. We're just going to go through this rather quickly to save some time for the rest of the presentation. So we'll just go what's on the screens here. So for compensatory skills, there's an app called Braille Touch that allows an individual to use six-finger entry, just like they're using on their Perkins Brailler, to put text into their iPhone. Again, we're not teaching Braille, we're just using a generalized skill. Recreation and leisure, we can use an activity like geocaching, which is a fun mainstream activity. There's lots of apps that allow people to do that using the voiceover. From a phone or the TalkBack on an Android phone, you can use that same type of app. Assistive adaptive technology, just talking about it is going to be part of that. But when you think about using a Compass app, for instance, with VoiceOver, that's going to allow you to have the ability to use that technology within the lesson. We can go on to that next screen. Independent living. This is just a huge area. Shopping lists at the grocery store, scanning apps for the packages, for checking barcodes, prices, all sorts of app options. Self-determination, using the browsers for having a student investigate their own eye condition, being able to use a simulator so that they can demonstrate to a teacher or a prospective employer what their vision is like so that they can relay that information. Setting personal goals, tracking progress on those goals, notes, journals, all part of that self-determination area. Social interaction, well, that's just an easy one for most of our adolescents. Telephone, texting, messaging, Facebook, all sorts of activities there. On to our next slide. Sensory efficiency, camera apps, CCTV apps, using those in grocery stores, malls, directory signs. If it's a student who's only using non-visual skills, making a stereo recording with just the built-in mic of traffic so that they can have that recording to practice identifying lulls and appropriate crossing times. Career education, looking up prospective employers, finding the address, planning a trip there, investigating working conditions at certain employers. And onto our next screen, orientation mobility in general, planning bus routes with transit apps, Most of our major metropolitan areas have their own apps, as well as those that will work across the country, like Google Maps, checking the weather to make sure that the student has the appropriate clothing. And the student can interact with the built-in voice like Siri or OK Google to be able to get information and have an exchange with that built-in technology. All these activities can be combined so that during one particular lesson, you could be addressing three or four areas of the expanded core curriculum and take care of all those areas if you're meeting with a student once a week, once a month, or somewhere in between. And just as a fun option, have the student teach you. There's a lot of gestures that they learn on their own with their friends, and they can have some opportunity to practice their teaching skills as well. And you can just, for just thinking about, for maybe a future blog post, think about what areas of the ECC they would be using if they were teaching you or someone else. And now we can move into the resource list from Anne and be on to some closing materials from Kate.
The first bullet on slide 38 refers to that handout that I mentioned earlier in today's webinar. It is a variation of a document that we used for the training back in July at Region 11. So some of you may have already seen it or in trainings that Deborah Sewell and I have done. Basically, we pulled out the O&M part of that. It's a really long document. It includes resources for both evaluation, if you look, that's what's included on the left-hand side, and then resources for instruction and curriculum materials on the right-hand side, and sometimes they overlap. What I did was pull out just the O&M part of that because it's, you know, a bajillion pages. But we will include each area of the ECC when we address a webinar. I'll give you another handout to pull all that together. The rest of that document has reference material, so you can find those resources, hopefully, and some websites as well. Also on that slide 38, there is the reference information for the new book from AFB, ECC Essentials. We mentioned that last webinar. Chapter 7 is on O&M. Practice Makes Perfect is a resource that Chris and Ruth Ann brought back from Region 4, and it's an awesome document. I don't know if there's a way to, I hadn't seen it before, but I did include it in that reference list. Kate has that up now, just so that you'll notice that list. Notice the left-hand side that's gray, I'm referring back to it. It lists the evaluations. The right-hand side lists teaching materials and resources. Okay. Slide 39, I know I'm flipping through this fast, but these are resources you can check when you have time. Be glad to answer questions about any of them at any time, and would love to know what you think about them. There may be things on there that you think are old or outdated, or they're not good, or there's something we've left off. It's definitely a work in progress. Welcome, and would love to have your suggestions about other things to include in this document. The slide 39 has ECC resources that are available on TSBBI's website, including that Q&A document and the evals kit that Christy mentioned. The others I hope you're already familiar with, and I know you can read the slide. And the very next slide, which is the next to last one, these are ECC resources that are available from AFB and the Perkins School for the Blind. And then there's the link for the Region 10 Education Service Center checklist for the ECC that Christy mentioned, and it's in an earlier slide, but here it is again, just in case you need it. That's a down and dirty quick summary. Kate, I bet they're ready for a code number